Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes, like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome.
Cisgendered woman, same gender loving, 48 years old, born and raised in the Christian, I'll say Christian diaspora. And when I mean born and raised, literally, like my mother was pregnant singing in the choir with me. And I have embraced and loved the quote unquote Black church. All of my life, even in her most problematic times. My ministry resume has included anywhere from, you know, leadership as in the junior choir, church secretary of Sunday school, all the way to getting ordained as a deacon in 2011. Wanting to return to gain additional opportunities and legal opportunities. So I went through the Universal Church to become a licensed minister. And that's just because I just wanted to open up myself to more opportunities and spiritual activity, if you will. Not that any of it's needed to do what Spirit wants you to do or what Universe wants you to do, but for some people need to see a title. On the natural side, I am in a relationship. I am also career-wise, I've launched out into my own business, Hope and Healing Salon, where I offer mental health rehabilitation. I work with your symptoms, not your diagnoses. And then also I do capacity building consultancy work. And I'm also expanding Hope and Healing to a few different arenas that include, spiritual trauma support, identity rehabilitation and support, as well as visioning for businesses and for individuals who want to discover their purpose. Lastly, academically, I hold a bachelor's in applied behavioral analysis, a master's in counseling psychology, and almost done with my doctorate in clinical psychology. I will become a licensed clinical psychologist, and then additional fund will begin. So that's me in a nutshell.
Thank you for that. I want to read this a couple of things. And again, thank you for bringing your expertise to this conversation. So in my research, what it says here is a high demand, high control religion expects subservience and loyalty, discouraging trusting relationships outside of the group. There's also another definition, but do you feel like that definition is accurate to what you've seen since you've been involved, literally since you were born? Like, my other question was like, how were you recruited? But and then it was like, were you born into it? You literally were born into a faith.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is quite accurate. While every church, I can't blanketly say every church falls under this right. guidelines or this culture,
right.
but upon what I've seen, I've been groomed, or should I say I was groomed to, be the one that, you know, if you act a certain way, you're more malleable for elders within the church to have you become different things. And so because my parents did not play And I learned at a young age that if I don't embarrass them, that I can pretty much get the world. Got it. Say less. And that includes imagery, you know. So, you know, because my elder sisters had their own times of doing things, it's like, can you just not mess up like your sisters did? And so I get that. I get that. And so when it came to me, it was, you know, because my parents invested in my education, I was well-spoken, I was, you know, pretty much charmed and things of that nature, so that, you know, if they needed me to do, I guess, any public speaking, anything within the church that went outside of what someone my age typically would do, it afforded me opportunities and, you know, to do different things in church. And then from there, you know, this is a cultural thing that's a part of being in the Black church, the cotillion. Now, I know it's a part of Black society, but for us, it was big within the Baptist and in the Church of God in Christ denominations. And so having the opportunity to be presented to society was something that they took very strongly, and it was, you know, a pretty hefty situation. So, you know, yeah, I was groomed to do all of the things. Won first place, got scholarships, all that stuff. The unfortunate part is that while it looks great for me to have these opportunities, my dearest and closest friends did not get these opportunities. Like, no one even spoke to them about doing different things. It was pretty much just, oh, you know, well, my middle name is what everybody called me by. It was like, well, Trina could do it. Let her do it. And so, you know, sorry.
Was this because they were not involved in the church?
No, they were just as involved. But, well, I would say this. They were there in attendance as much as I was. Okay. But as far as, and I hate to say this, but as a 48-year-old looking back on the lives of teenagers, I could see that there was a difference in SES, definitely, because my parents, after Dr. King got killed,
SES,
social economic status.
Ah, thank you.
So after Dr. King got killed on April 4th, my parents left the west side of Chicago where our church was and moved to the south side. So they left community where everybody was one to move to the south side. Moving to the south side of Chicago in the 60s and 70s was pretty much to make you, it turned into a us versus them, because now you're moving to pretty much what is considered more of a white area, white communities and neighborhoods. And they did. My parents were like the only, I think they were the first or second Black couple in that neighborhood.
Like my family.
So because of that, it caused a divide on presentation. And so, yes, you know, that happened. So, you know, it impacted, you know, my friends and I, you know, so we tried to stay friends because we still loved each other and we didn't know these things. But growing up, I understood that they did not have the things that my parents could afford, the clothes, cars, all this other
stuff. I get it.
And so when your parents are seen differently, you're treated differently.
Absolutely.
And that's really what it was in a nutshell.
And for you, it was being elevated.
Exactly. When there was no need. There was no need. And so that was the culture, unfortunately. And so my friends, who were very dear to my heart, we would have our sleepovers and everything like that. They would all come to my house for the sleepovers and everything, because everybody wanted to come to the house, to our parents' house. I wanted to get away. My parents were like, absolutely not. You're going to have everything here. So that was what it was. But projecting this imagery and this ideology is, in my opinion, I felt like it was classism. And it's in its fullest, and definitely showed up hard in the church pews. And so when I got opportunities to do different things, my friends didn't. And then they grew, not necessarily in resentment of certain adults, but it was just, it turned into, why are you getting favored for different things when you don't even work for it? And that's the honest to God truth. And so because of that, that caused differences, and it was loud. it definitely was the loud thing that everybody was trying to keep quiet.
So go ahead.
No, yeah, that was it.
It was loud and everybody was trying to keep quiet. So the second part of this says a high demand control religion is a faith community that requires obedience, discourages its members from questioning its rules, principles, and practices.
That is very true.
Sounds like what you're describing, where people are seeing a certain kind of injustice and people are not actually empowered to talk about it openly.
No, not at all. And when it came to the concept of accepting the religion, the doctrine, everything was based upon faith. And then you were taught, I remember the elders teaching us, you don't question God. You trust God. You don't question God. And then there was a counter argument of, well, how can you say you're in a relationship with, of course, this patriarchal stance of a loving father, if within a relationship, you can't have dialogue, you can't have questioning, you can't ask for reasoning, you know? And so then an elder would come back and say, that's not what this is about. You trust God. You're here to serve God with your life. And so anyone, I've watched individuals even in senior leadership be shunned away from the church because they have questions that were extremely valid. Because keep in mind, the Bible was inspired. It was written by man, but inspired by God.
So you kind of have jumped to the next question, because the next question is about, of course, you know, this book is about cults and high demand religions. And so thinking about HDRs and some of the manipulative tactics they might use to control their members. So shunning sounds like one of them. What are some other tactics that were used on you in particular, or the people around you?
Sure. I'm perfectly fine with speaking to my experience. When it came to being in senior leadership, there were just things that you had to follow. For example, if you were dating someone, keep in mind, I had to impose a very heterosexual ideology and image. I wasn't sure completely of my identity, to be very honest, but I wasn't certain about this is who I am, but I knew what I needed to do. You know, my heart may have felt a couple of things about someone that I was with or engaging with or growing a relationship with, but I had to walk that line. So if you were dating someone, there was this thing that we had to engage in the church that I was a part of in my young adult years called the courtship process. So if you're dating someone and they act like they like you, then you have to bring them to church. People have to see what that person looks like. They have to meet your pastor. They have to then have meetings either after church on Sundays or after Wednesday night Bible study, where it's like, let me, you know, the pastor has to speak to the person, make sure that they are about who they are. And then the courtship process goes all the way from getting to know them hanging out with you, with your quote unquote church family, going into a time of betrothal, which was equivalent to Mary and Joseph, where you're officially going together with the intent for marriage. At this point, both of you all will bring your credit reports to the pastor. They will get a chance to look through what you all have done and how you handle your finances. Then from there, you will get assigned a couple that will be your mentors. Then when the guy is ready to ask for your hand in marriage, he has a conversation with your pastor, and then the engagement will happen as followed, and then you get married, and then you're basically a part of the Duggard family. So yeah. So that's pretty much how it goes. Also, other instances of being in senior leadership includes how you spend your time. If you find yourself doing things, if you want to go on vacation, it has to get approved by the pastor. So that means you submit your vacation time and location, where you're going and what you're doing, who you're going to be with. If you're going by yourself, then who's going to follow up and be accountable to, you know, who you're going to be accountable to while you're out there, to make sure you're okay, because you're a part of the family and your family loves you and they want to make sure you're okay. And then that happens. And let's see, what else? And so even in your relation, are you okay? Or this is a lot?
Listen. The engagement part sounds kind of cute in theory and like protective and all these things. And this is just for senior leadership.
This was, well, this, it was expected for me to do it as a person in senior leadership. But honestly, all of the singles who quote unquote said that they, who said that they wanted to be a part of the church and you were single, that's what was expected. Now, what has happened before?
Going on vacation.
Yeah. Yeah. This, and now the vacation thing was for everybody. If you are going to go and you're going to visit another church, then it had to be explained as to why you're going to go to another church. What are you going to visit for? We have, especially if you have responsibilities. If you have responsibilities, then you have to find someone to cover you if it's very important or if it's something that can't be covered.
Is this a paid position when you're talking about responsibility?
Absolutely not. You're paid through God blessing you. Yeah. This is a 501c3 organization, babes. Nobody was paid. I mean, and except for people who were doing stuff that required payment. Like, I don't even know how much people were honestly paid. But yeah, I paid with my life. I paid with my spare time. I paid with, my youth. I paid with my body being tired. I paid with my emotions. Having to deal with narcissistic situations and being gaslit on a lot of occasions. I paid. I definitely paid. But I gained a lot of wisdom. That's all I can say.
Yeah. And you just keep answering the questions before I can get to them. But this one is about your identity as a Black woman, femme. Is there specific challenges or conflicts related to your racial or gender identity with this group of people?
Well, the last church that I was a part of was technically a Black church. I said it was a Black church, a white church with a Black face. The denomination is predominantly white in the United States. Okay. However, when it came to different things that would happen, from a female femme perspective, the denomination itself was male first. They believed in male leadership. Okay. Even when we taught new members class, we told people that, you know, the denomination and the church itself believes in male leadership.
Okay.
And so because of that,
I'm sorry, that's what they said?
Yes. Yes. Now, and that's wild because in a church where the women are doing all the work,
right?
That's what it is. But say, for instance, if a woman is a pastor,
right?
She can be that pastor, but she still has to be in account to the nearest male pastor. Like, right. They still cover her.
What does that mean? What is being into account? What does covering mean for people who don't know these things?
Sure. Covering basically would mean that if there is a situation and they need to gain wisdom. Now, the church where I come from, there is the pastor is a female now. And because of that, hold on, let me.
I'm walking and talking as well because I need
No, it's okay. I'm just trying to hope that she'll stay
calm. Because I'm going to be leaving soon, so I need to close windows and do things like that. But I'm listening.
Sure.
In shock.
So, yeah, because of the fact that if there is a woman, they still have to have a male to be accountable to. Now,
I get you. Okay.
Yeah. So now, because the fact that the pastor who is the founder of the church is still alive and just turned the leadership over to someone else, and then it transitioned to a woman, then she would still have to have a male person to be accountable to.
Okay.
wisdom for, to ask about questions and just to have covering, really, spiritual covering and natural covering within that region.
Natural covering.
Yeah.
What's so the difference?
Spiritual covering is pretty much like, you know, this is a person who knows what our organization is going through. Pray for certain issues within the church. Covering could be like if something happens at the church,
okay,
additional support, that pastor, that male pastor will probably send some people over,
okay,
if there is an issue with the building or something.
Okay, got it.
Or just need an additional support with their congregants.
Got it. And is there a reason, again, for people who are going to read this, who are not familiar with these practices, is there a reason that it had to be a male that did this cover?
Because of the fact that it's from a perspective of beholding the hierarchy of Jesus, of God being a male person.
Ah.
Because God is projected as a male, even though we understand that God is genderless.
Yes.
Because what's interesting is that people will still say God will be a mother to the mothers and a father to the fatherless. So what are we saying?
Right.
We're including both genders, but only when it's convenient.
Okay.
And so because of that hierarchical structure, it is saying that, you know, hey, you know, God is a male. Jesus is a male. They're even sometimes equating the Holy Spirit as a male. Yes,
I know.
And so, yeah. So because of all of that, you have this this ideology that, you know, male structuring is what should happen, that right, the male is the head of the household, the male right, should be the head of the church, and so forth and so on.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so thank you for that clarification for people who may not know. I would love to hear what your position is on this, because to me, I find it, I didn't when I was younger, but now I'm older, right? I have a little bit more knowledge about certain things and a little bit more of the ability to do critical thinking. And yes, as a critical thinker, I find it strange that we equate a universal being with any gender. It doesn't make sense to me that God would have a gender.
Yes.
It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
What's your position?
So, because of the fact that I grew up with a father who was very emotionally intelligent, spiritually intelligent, it worked out for me to buy the need why there was the reason why there was male leadership. My dad was phenomenal.
Okay.
But he was also very much, he was a girl dad. He had all girls. So he was very much for women doing what they wanted. Okay. Us being empowered to do what we want to do. At least that's what I got.
Okay.
You know, anything that I wanted to do, my father was like, just how much?
Yeah.
You know, now my sisters weren't as adventurous or risky as I was, but I'm pretty sure he was the same dad growing up with them as he was with me.
Okay.
Now, so with that being said, my initial ideology of males being in charge, I'm like, oh, that's cool, because I had a great dad.
Oh. Who,
you know, it worked for me.
Got it.
Now, that was me at 25, okay? 24, 25. Now, me here at this big age, I'm like, that was just my daddy. I have sat up and I've watched, you know, the one church that I was a part of growing up as a child, where women weren't allowed to walk in the pulpit. Women weren't allowed to preach. It was not, they just couldn't do it because of their gender. And they said that God said, no, that's not what they could do. So then you look up, and not only is that the case, but the men were, they would not, they come from an era of, it's not necessary to get a degree in seminary because God called me and that's all that matters. However, the women would have already went to seminary because they already believed that God called them and they've proven themselves. The men would have affairs and stay in the pulpit. They would admit what they did and keep it moving. The women were still not allowed to do anything because of their genitalia. That part. That's it. That's how it was. So it's dangerous because now we have to bring critical thinking into the group chat. We have to say, this is what's happening. And because of what I know and what I understand, there's no way that I could submit to this. There's no way that I could be a part of this longer.
And it's not logical, right? And also on a biological aspect. So we are taught that men's brains develop slower. Girls typically walk first. We talk first. Their brains aren't fully developed until they're 25 or so.
Exactly.
If biologically their brains develop slower than ours, how are they supposed to lead? It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't.
It's not logical.
No, it's not logical. And there are instances where men will acknowledge that, or you look up and you'll have this happen, what I saw with my own eyes, where you'll have a woman who's a leader within the ministry, and all she's doing is allowing the men to sit and basically, like, she'll nurse them into being something.
Yikes.
She'll nurse them.
And it's like all out.
Yeah. It was what it was. And people will say, oh my God, you're just doing the Lord's work. Not necessarily, sis. Not necessarily. And so it was
the Lord's work by nursing these men.
Yeah. To become something. Yeah. And so you're not valued enough to, and you're going to have restrictions on you because of your gender, but in essence, you can create someone, but you cannot stand up and be respected for who you are and what you work with and your own gifts that you were created to have.
What do you think the effect is on women dealing with this kind of gaslighting? So you can talk about obviously the impact on yourself, but I'm also curious about what are some of the impacts that you've seen?
Yeah, I think about the whole concept of, and I'm purposely going to be controversial with this.
Come on.
I think about T.D. Jakes. For 30 years, we were women who needed to be loosed. And we went to your conferences. We bought your books. We downloaded or bought your CDs and downloaded your stream and streamed your music. We bought the workbooks. We, you know, some of us got attached to an ideology about us being less than, and, you know, and having other female ministers come in and talk about how, you know, we were promiscuous and, you know, needing to be saved and no more sheets and all of this other kind of
stuff. I literally was just thinking about no more sheets, and then look what happened.
Listen, I knew no more sheets by heart. Don't play me. I knew it by heart. But my thing is, you look up and you tell us that something is wrong with us because we're women, we're the weaker vessel, we're this, we're that.
Right.
You do that in order. I mean, and it's the most beautiful marketing that you could ever do. Mm-hmm. But then last year, he says in his pulpit, women, we didn't raise you right because now are acting as if you don't need a man.
Who is we didn't raise?
That was what Bishop Jake said from his pulpit. There's a video out.
But that's who is the we.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Who's raising?
Listen, if it wasn't Minnie and John, what other grown person are you talking about? But yet and still, from a patriarchal religious perspective, a lot of pastors see themselves as parents.
Over children. Okay.
And that's the position. There are people who call their pastors daddy
and mommy for the first lady. Yeah, let's, yeah, that exists. That exists. So you look up and he says this last year about, we didn't raise you all right, because now you believe that you're able to do these different things, and I'm paraphrasing, and that you don't need a man. So when the man is leaving, now you got a problem. And it's like, but my thing is, we've had to be these things because the man didn't show up.
Right.
I mean, or you look up and you were left to be the head of a household because of his issues and insecurities from wherever it came from.
Right.
Maybe it came from the streets. Maybe it came from his mama or his daddy. We don't know. But it's been a perpetual cycle that now we're getting blamed for.
Right.
And so now you're going to put out another book to straighten us out after you spend 30 years making sure that we were loosed to be all that we needed to be.
What is the impact of this?
So the impact of this is that you have women that become, that don't acknowledge what has happened because they don't have the mental capacity to actually say that they've been harmed. Mm. Within the church, we even believe, and it's been, I've been taught before about the fact that I am a slave to Christ. And so with that being said, as what I learned to believe, that as a young adult woman, I belong to Christ. I belong to the church and the things of the church. So whatever it is that's being put upon me, I deserve this. And this is how I show my respect and love and gratitude to Christ. So I do what's told to me. So I become a pick me when it comes to the things that are going on. I accept these ideologies because I don't have the mental capacity or the ability to think critically to say, but what if this was connected to a white supremacist system wrapped in this ideology of Christianity that has you think in a certain way? And so that's where it's coming from. That's what we turn into. So you will have women who will sit under ministers and preachers that are on TikTok preaching, talking about, in order for you to get the man that you need, you too big of a girl. You need to work out. You need to change this. You need to get a different bundle of
women. Pastors, preachers are saying this.
Yes. And they go viral. And then they come back and they defend it. And then they have the women in their church who say, he didn't say nothing wrong. He wasn't lying. And so, you know, it's almost like a Stockholm syndrome type situation. Mm-hmm. That you subscribe to, where you believe the worst about you because that's what you're told to believe.
Thank you for that. So many people, I think, that are not, I'm having a deja vu moment right now. This is crazy. We've had this conversation before. Wow. Some of the people who may not be, grown up in the church, this is going to be very shocking to them. And I think people who maybe, I think it's going to be very shocking to a lot of people, the depths of what you're talking about in this particular, and we know not all.
Yeah.
But I think that
we do know not all, but the thing is, the others won't tell the others to stop.
Yeah.
That's the problem. So you know, someone can say not all police, but no one will tell the others, hey, you're right. Making it look bad. You're that's basically right. Invalidating us.
And that's the issue.
Yeah, this is a lot. The specifics, like I knew broad strokes, but the specifics of how it goes down is shocking. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found interesting, which is one of the many reasons why I wanted to talk with you, is in delving into this project, I've been able to see very much more clearly the impact of these religions and domestic violence. When my first book, I talked about the impact of religion and how it influences violence against women. But
now I'm looking at the tactics and seeing the similarity between abusive partners and high demand religions. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that, sort of the control and the, yeah, just the similarities.
Mm-hmm. Depending on the structure by which you're coming from, like what your church structure and culture looks like, you could have a pastor who is very hyper-masculine and believes in the promotion of their men to be the head of the household, to be the protector and all those great things, be the responsible one, the worker and things like that. However, there are times when things will happen, and depending on how that pastor structures or teaches the men about how to stand, how to be and deal with their own demons, could determine what happens. Like I can say one pastor that I was under that, you know, they didn't play when it came to the intimate partner violence.
Okay.
You know, and so when it came to that, it was like, you know, the brothers were going to be like, so, oh, you think you can hit somebody? Well, how would it feel if we hit you? You know, there was an incident where someone was just a congregant who was not having a good moment with their children's father. And it was happening in the parking lot. I saw it. I immediately went to the pastor about what was going on because it turned into a car chase. And, you know, it was like, how do we help de-escalate the situation and keep everybody, you know, at the church safe without having to broadcast what's going on? Okay. So, you know, they were strategic about doing things to keep women safe.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that they knew how to keep relationships healthy. And to be honest, it wasn't their place. Okay. So there were times when too much intrusion into a situation could make something volatile at the same time.
Okay.
And if a man does not know how to handle their emotions and things like that, depending on what the circumstance is, the leader may not have known how to be objective and just be neutral when it comes to wanting peace and restoration and reconciliation. Versus jumping on what the man is saying, because that's not your job to stand behind him just because he said he's hurt.
Oh, I see.
So uh-huh. I have to be careful with this because if it goes into a book, people read it. I don't want nobody on my throat. But yeah,
no, exactly. I get it.
Off record, I can give you some things, but this is on record.
Yeah.
But it's just it's a matter of what he's dealing with. And where he is determine what could happen and his relationship. Because again, if you present yourself as a male a pastor and you bring the men in like they're your sons, you're pulling in men who, even if they got fathers, they're going to want to still pull from you because you're giving them love and attention and time.
Uh-huh.
You know, you would get together with the men at 10 o'clock at night on a Monday and play basketball all night. Uh-huh. And they're loving that because that's their attention. It's feeding their masculinity and they're getting a chance to get some wisdom. But when it came to the intimate partner part, what I saw was more instances of men being redirected on how to deal with his issues.
Uh-huh.
But it could have definitely been done in a better way.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that. So when you decided to leave, did you have any problems seeking support or understanding from outside resources or outside sources?
Mm.
Or did you find it relatively easy?
Seeking support outside the church to leave?
Yeah, when you decided to leave.
Now, so are we saying leaving the church holistically, like disconnecting from the church?
Yeah, when you decided to disconnect from the church.
Oh. So yeah, when I felt that it was time to go, at that point I had started investing in this spiritual center that was not a religion, if you will, but it kind of was. The Centers for Spiritual Living, in my opinion, are not like your traditional Black cultured church.
Okay.
However, it has its own scent feel for its own church as well.
Yeah.
But then when I noticed and start seeing things within that realm, I knew I needed to get a clean break. At that point, I left Chicago, moved to California, and I just wanted to be a part of something that, or just to see something or learn and have tenets in my life where I could just be a kind person.
Mm.
So coming in contact with a young lady at the school where I work, who was just genuinely nice. And I asked her about being, why is she so kind? And I was waiting for her to be like, well, my bishop says, or my pastor teaches us, but she wasn't. She was like, we need to be kind to each other. And I was like, yeah. So what's your catch? What's your story? And she was like, well, I mean, I just want to be kind, but oh yeah, I do follow Buddhist teachings. Mm-hmm. And so that separation of understanding more, mm-hmm. and wanting to just be able to make a difference in my community without having to follow rules that tell me I'm a wretch undone. I'm wrapped in sin and shaped in iniquity. My flesh will never give me any good. You know, I'm evil first before I'm anything. So I have to continue to beat my flesh every day. You know, I don't want to hear that. And there was a minister that I follow and online, and he said at a conference for preachers, and you can edit this however you want, and I can give you his detailed information. He said, you do know that we spend every Sunday teaching the doctrine and telling people that they ain't shit. He said, how do you tell someone they're made in the image of God and then in the next breath preach to them how much they ain't shit? Oh, and I got tired of that. I don't want to wake up and tell a God good morning that I love, that is told, I'm told loves me, but then I'm also the worst thing in the world. Right. I need to be equal with my life.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I started learning more about Nichiren Buddhism and how I can make a difference in my world and in those and lives of people that I touch. And that's it. And that's myself.
I love that. I love that. And if you could share one piece of advice as we start to come to a close, I have two more questions. What would you tell Black women or femmes or non-binary individuals who may be facing recruitment or they are recovering from these experiences?
Be able to know the difference. Number one, you didn't deserve this. This was not God's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the failure of a system caused the church to look like the world. This was not God's plan, despite what you see, because we see God translated into a Bible, but you also have to understand that these people really know God. You have the ability to know God and then also understand how people who claim to be her children can work. And knowing this difference will help you understand who God is if you so choose to follow God. If you need a different name, source, universe, because I understand things may have been done to you in God's name and it could be triggering to you. This could bring about trauma. You know, I totally understand, but there is someone, this God entity is different than what they've been perceived to be. That's what I've learned. And so because of that, seek to be healthy for yourself and know God separate from all of those other things. Take a break, disconnect, divest. Mm-hmm. But I get how the culture will bring you back because you have people to look at. You'll have people to talk to. But trust and believe that if you want something good, you want something healthy, you want something that is connecting you to a God that loves you, it will come.
Thank you for that. And what are some of the things that make Black women, femmes, susceptible, in your opinion, to recruitment?
I was told by someone in senior leadership, they're pastoring now, that ain't nobody gonna love you like we do.
That's the same thing batterers say.
Ain't nobody gonna love you like we do. Who's gonna get up and come see about you in the midnight hour? Who's gonna love you? Who's gonna pray for you? Who's gonna be concerned about your spiritual growth? All of these tactics of abuse and manipulation is unfortunate, and you can still have loving, caring relationships. I've been cared for more outside of being a part of the Black church and the churches that I was a part of than I was before. I spent more time giving. Therefore, it's odd for me now to be on the receiving end. Sometimes it feels odd, but then I have to understand that I too deserve to be cared for and loved. And being a part of these abusive like entities and circles will have you thinking that you're only supposed to give. Because they'll tell you the systems are set up, it's called joy, Jesus, others, yourself last. And that's how you serve God. Baby, that's not biblical. That's not. And so if you look up and scripture talks about how God wants you to do, Jesus literally before he left the earth wanted you to do greater exploits and do greater things than he did. That invalidates someone telling you that your gender gets in the way. Don't believe that. That because of who you love gets in the way. Don't believe that. Because of how much money you have and what you think you're able to do and your academic status and all these other kind of things. Don't believe that. So that's why it's so important to disconnect from the structure, disconnect from the culture. And actually, if you want to accept this, know that there is a God that cares for you. And that they poured into Buddhism, they poured into Hinduism, all these other things could be a way for you. The teachings could be a way for you to live the life you want to live.
Thank you, Jondalyn Armstrong.
Thank you, Zoe, for this opportunity.
You're going to help so many people. I mean, you already are. Yeah, thank you for that, this beautiful conversation and this beautiful, you know, all the knowledge that you dropped. And is there anything else that you've already said so much. Is there anything else you feel like maybe I should have asked that you wanted to say? Just want to make sure that you said everything that you feel like you have to say.
When it comes to our healing, no one gives you permission to do that. That's one thing I want to say. Within church structures, a lot of them don't believe in the pursuit of mental health. They will put you in front of someone that they believe just because they're older or they've been through things, they can tell you stuff. Now, we can learn from everybody, but never put anyone in charge of your own healing. So that part, that's all.
Thank you so much. Amazing, amazing, amazing.
Thank you for listening to this special episode of Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. I'm honored to revisit this conversation and reflect on the ways grief, healing, and identity shape our journeys, especially for Black women navigating high-demand religions and/or spiritual control. But there's more to uncover, so be sure to tune in for future episodes as we continue exploring what it means to live, heal, and rise through grief, truth, and transformation. Because no one should be on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers. And I'll see you next time. Bye.